All right. I imagine that you guys at Fields are getting the presentation. Is that true? All right. Then it's my pleasure to introduce Nathan Ng from the University of Lethbridge. After we get his mic on, he'll be talking about effective Chebotaro and computation.
Great. So I'm going to talk about two results which are related to effective Chebotaro and which I've done some computation. So just to remind everyone here, let's begin with a simple case of Chebotaro's theorem. So if you don't know what it is, it's some grand generalization of the prime number theorem and also a generalization of Dirichlet's theorem. So let's take this polynomial, and its Galois group is the symmetric group on four letters. And let's reduce this polynomial mod p. Okay. So there's five cases that occur. It could be irreducible. It could have a linear factor and a cubic factor, two quadratic factors, irreducible quadratic, two linear factors, or four linear factors. Okay. So here's a few calculations. And I should say one thing. If the first case occurs, I'll call it C1. Second case, C2. Third case, C3. Fourth case, C4, and C5. Okay, so let's look at a few calculations. So mod 2, you get it's irreducible. Mod 3, it's irreducible, and et cetera. You see various other cases. Here you get two quadratic factors and two linear factors. And you can go on doing this for as many primes as you like. So for p equals 83, you get four linear factors. Okay. So the question we could ask is, how often does each case occur? Okay. So that's what Frobenius theorem is. And it says the following thing. The relative frequencies of each case is as follows, 6 over 24, 8 over 24, etc. And the way you get these numbers is, if it's irreducible, it corresponds to the conjugacy class of 4 cycles, and there's 6 elements in that conjugacy class, in S4. If it has a cubic factor and a linear factor, then there's 8 elements, and it corresponds to this conjugacy class. And that's basically what Frobenius theorem says. And this is some sort of generalization of the prime number theorem. And it's a special case of Chebotaro's theorem. So now I'm going to restate the Chebotaro's theorem in the language of algebraic number theory. Okay, so I'm going to take L over K as the number field extensions with Galois group G. Okay. I'm going to set DL to be its absolute discriminant of L. NL is the degree of the extension. P is a prime ideal of K with Frobenius symbol sigma P. And I'll let C denote a conjugacy class of G. Okay. I'm going to define the prime counting function to be pi C of X. It counts the number of prime ideals whose norm is less than X and whose Frobenius equals C. And they're unramified primes, too. Okay. So in 1926, Chebotaro proved this theorem, that pi C of X is asymptotic to C over G times lie of X. Okay. So this includes the theorem I just showed you, Frobenius theorem, and it includes that special case. The problem with this theorem is it's not effective. So it says as X goes to infinity. In 1979, Ligarius and Lidsko proved this version of Chebotaro's density theorem. It gives you an effective version. In the second error term, you see something that occurs like in the prime number theorem. You have NL, the degree of the extension L. And there's also a first term which has a term which depends on a zero of the Dedekind zeta function, which can be very close to real S equals 1. So if you have a zero which is very close to 1, this is bad. And this is also... this is for X larger than this number here, which depends on the field. Okay? So beta 0 could be a 0 of the Dedekind zeta function, and it will sit in this region here. So all you can think of it as some number very close to 1 if it exists, and it's like the Landau-Siegel 0 in the case of Dirichlet-L functions. Okay? So I'm going to now talk about a theorem on the least prime ideal whose Frobenius equals C. Okay? So we could ask for an asymptotic, but we could also ask when does the first prime occur whose Frobenius is C. Okay. So I'm going to set P of C to be the set of prime ideals in OK such that P is unramified in L, and this frobenius is C, and the norm is a rational prime. So we have, from the same time, we have this theorem of Ligarius, Montgomery, and Lithgow, where they show if the Dedekind theta, so if the Riemann hypothesis is true for the Dedekind theta function, then the norm of the least prime is less than log dL squared. Okay. They also proved at the same time, they gave an unconditional bound, which is they show there exists an explicit constant A such that the least prime is less than dL to the A. The problem, one thing with this proof is they never determined the value of A. So this is some sort of generalization of Linux theorem. And recently, last year, we proved the following theorem that you can take A to be 40. So this is joint with Kadiri. And this is for sufficiently large DL. Okay. So I'm just, in a moment, I'll say a few words of maybe what went into that proof, but I won't go through the details. I'll just remind the people in the audience when you prove a theorem like this, you have to work with Artinel functions. So I'm going to set rho to be an irreducible representation, and chi is its character. So it's the trace of that representation. Associated to this representation is an Artinel function. So if you've seen this before, it's given by this product over prime ideals, and you have a determinant of that expression there. Okay? There's also ramified primes you have to throw in there too, but this is essentially the Artinel function. So there's a conjecture that is, if rho is a non-trivial representation, then this is entire. Okay? So we know this is true for a billion extensions. So when trying to prove a theorem like the theorems we just mentioned, you work with these functions, and you also work with Dedekind theta functions, which are, it's the sum over the ideals of OL, the norm of them to the S power. Okay? And those are related to Artinel functions by this product formula. Okay. So I'll say a few words about how we get this. We show that the least prime is less than dL to the 40. Okay. So if you look at, we looked at the original proof of Ligarius, Montgomery, and Lithgow, and if you try to follow that proof line by line, you're going to get something very large, maybe like a billion or something like that. The best you could possibly get right now without getting an improvement of a theorem of Burgess is about 0.15. So if you look at a bound for the least quadratic non-residue mod P, then we don't know anything better than 0.15. So if we could get better than that, then it would be a very good result. The proof uses zero free regions for the Dedekind theta function. It also uses something called the Doering-Halbern phenomenon, which is if you have a zero of a Dedekind theta function which is close to 1, then all the other zeros have to be much further away from 1. So this is called a repulsion property. And the last thing you need to use is a zero density result. So it says if you have a little circle around 1, can you give a bound for the number of zeros of the Dedekind theta function in that circle? Okay, so that's the zero density result. So the original proof of Ligarius, Montgomery, and Lithgow used all three of these elements, and we had to work out good versions of this with good constants. One thing we use is McCurley's zero-free region method, which he does for Dirichlet-L functions, and this uses something called Stechkin's method. Another part of the proof is Heath Brown's work on Linux constant. So those are just some of the ideas that go into it. I'll just mention briefly one sample theorem. So we can prove the following theorem. The Dedekind theta function has at most one a zero in this region. And what's important here is this constant 13. So if we can make the 13 smaller, we could get better results for A equals 40. And there may be one real simple zero of the Dedekind theta function in this region. So this work involves a lot of computation with MAPLE and checking that inequalities are correct. And it takes a lot of hard work, actually, just to get 13. So that's the first part of the talk. Next part of the talk, I want to talk about something which involves more computations and Chebotarev's density theorem. So an old problem in analytic number theory is to study study primes can go into 3 mod 4 and to 1 mod 4. So Chebyshev observed that there seems to be more primes can go into 3 mod 4 than 1 mod 4. And one could ask, is this always true? Is it always larger? And this turns out not to be the case. Another question you could ask is, does this set have a natural density? And this was answered about, I think, 10 or 15 years ago by Kazurowski and Sarnak. They showed this does not have a natural density. And some people thought he even had a density 1. So Rubinstein and Sarnak showed in 94 that this set does have a logarithmic density. So if you put it on a logarithmic scale, it does have a density, but you have to assume the Riemann hypothesis and the zeros of the zeta function are linearly independent. The ordinates are linearly independent over the rationals. Okay. So what they showed is if you look at a density of this shape, then this exists for this set. So what you have to do, instead of dividing by x, you divide by 1 over log x, and the measure is dt over t. Okay. So what they did in their paper was they did a calculation, and they showed that in the logarithmic density, this set is 9.59% of the time, pi x 4.3 is larger than pi x 4.1. Okay? And this uses about, I think, 10,000 zeros of a Dirichlet-L function. You need them to about 10 digits of accuracy. Okay? So we could ask other questions too. We could ask, let's look at a different set. Let's look at sets of this shape. Let's take, say, Q to be a prime, and let's count the number of primes congruent to A mod Q and B mod Q. Okay? And it's also known by the work of Rubinstein and Sarnak that this possesses a logarithmic density too. Okay? So I'm just going to say a few words about this. So last time we saw it was 99.59% of the time pi x 3.4 is bigger than pi x 1.4. What they showed was if a and b are both squares or non-squares mod q, then this density is equal to half. So it means half the time pi x q a is ahead of pi x q b and the other way too. Okay? So they also showed if A is a non-square mod Q and B is a square mod Q, then this density is bigger than a half. Okay? So there's a moral to this, that the squares are losers. So when you look in prime number races, the squares always seem to lose. Okay? So I want to discuss this in a different setting. So there's been a lot of work on this in recent years. So Bayes, Hudson, Ford, Carniagan, Martin, Fiorelli spoke about this week. So this has been quite an active subject, and I want to talk about another sort of race which is related, and it's a race when you look at two conjugacy classes of a Galois group. Okay. So in this case, by Chebotar's density theorem, we know that pi cix is asymptotic to this times li of x. The problem is if you take two conjugacy classes, they could have different sizes. So then the race won't be fair. You need to normalize them. So what you really should look at is a set of this shape. So the question is, if I take two conjugacy classes, who wins and who loses? Okay, so the first guess is you have to look at the squares. So if you go back in the Billion setting, the squares always lose to the non-squares mod Q. So you would think maybe the same thing happens in the number field setting. So I'm going to make a definition. So let's take a conjugacy class of G, and I'm going to say SQ inverse of C, it's all elements that square to something in C. So it's the union of all conjugacy classes whose square contained in C. So let's look at this simple example. Let's look at the symmetric group on three letters. It has three conjugacy classes, these three. And let's square each of them. So C1 squared is itself. C2 squared is C1, the 2 cycle square, so 1 cycle, and you square a 3 cycle, you get a 3 cycle. So what we get is SQ inverse of C1 is C1 union C2, SQ inverse of C2 is empty, and SQ inverse of C3 is C3. So let's just try to answer who's going to win and who's going to lose. So if I took those three conjugacy classes, does anyone have a guess of which is going to be the loser in a race? So it's C1 is a square, so if you look at it, C1 is the biggest square, because four things are squaring to something in C1. C3 is a square too, because it squares to itself, and nothing squares to C2. So the loser should be C1 in any race. C3, if it's racing with C1, should beat it, because it's a square, but fewer things square to it, and the outright winner should be C2. Okay. So let's see if this is true. So you can prove a proposition of this shape, okay? If you look at the difference between the prime counting functions, you get a constant factor here and a sum over zeros of R(L) functions and something small, okay? In the first term, so if C1 is a non-square, then this term here is going to be zero, and you get something positive, and this generally should be positive. And if C2 was a square, this would be positive, and that would be, say, zero. So that shows why you would get why the squares would lose and the non-squares would win. I have to make a few comments, though. So here, chi ranges through characters of the Galois group L over K. And in here, 1/2 plus I gamma ranges through zeros of the R(L) functions. Okay? There's one thing that you have to be careful about here. What if the R(L) function vanishes at 1/2? So in the case studied by Rubin and Sarnak and others, you have Dirichlet-L functions, and it's conjectured that they never vanish. So that would give no contribution from this term here. But for R(L) functions, possibly you could get an extra contribution from here, and it would affect that. So we'll just keep that in mind. So let's look at I'll state a theorem, and then we'll look at an example. So if you define this difference of prime counting functions normalized by log x over root x, assuming the Riemann hypothesis and Artin's conjecture, then there's a limiting distribution such that we have this expression. Okay, so f here ranges over all bounded Lipschitz functions. And what this is some sort of measure which describes how this E of X behaves. Okay? So this measure is built out of zeros of R(L) functions. And moreover, if you assume that the imaginary ordinates of R(L) functions are linearly independent of the rationals, you can compute the Fourier transform of this measure. And once you know that, you can calculate logarithmic densities. Okay? So let's look at an example. So let's set k to be the rationals, and let's take the polynomial x cubed minus x minus 1. This has Galois group S3, and we have those three conjugacy classes. Okay. I think I pressed too hard. Okay, so we have three prime counting functions. The ones I mentioned before, you have to normalize them by factors. So the first one is those whose frobenius is C1, then whose frobenius is C2, and frobenius is C3, and you put the appropriate factors in front. Okay. So by the dilemma, we have the following formula. So the race between C1 and C2, there's a minus 4 in front, so C2 should lead C1. Between C1 and C3, that's negative, so C3 should lead C1, 2, as I said before. And same with C2 should lead C3, because you have a negative there. That's just what the formulas say, but let's see exactly what we get. There's two non-trivial R(L) functions here. The first one is a quadratic Dirichlet-L function, mod 23. And the second non-trivial R(L) function corresponds to a weight 1 modular form. Okay? And the modular form you're looking at is this one here. It's a to z, a to 23z, and this is the Dedekind eta function. So it's given by this infinite product, and q is equal to e to the 2 pi iz. Okay. If you expand it out, you can write it as an times qn, where q is e to the 2 pi iz. Okay. I should note one thing. We can reinterpret this race between different conjugacy classes in a different way. In fact, it's known that the Frobenius equals C1 if and only if the pth Fourier coefficient of the modular form is 2, Frobenius is C2 if and only if the pth coefficient is 0, and Frobenius is C3 if and only if AP is minus 1. Okay, so this is sort of a different type of prime number race. It's between when a modular form coefficient equals a different value. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to set pij to be the set of x bigger than 2, such that pi ix beats pi jx. And what we did was we found the following values for the densities. The logarithmic density for when the second conjugacy class beats the first one is 98.3%. When the second beats the third, it's 72.46%. And when the third one meets the first one, is 95.7%. Okay. To do a calculation like this, you need to find about 1,000 zeros of each L function to about 10 digits of accuracy. And you have to check that the L functions don't vanish at S equals a half. Okay. So at the time I did this calculation, So at the time I did this calculation, I used the zeros that, so Robert Remnick had computed some zeros using Euler-Maclaurin summation, and he had a disk and he had a list of all these zeros. So these were used. And also, I had to compute the zeros of LSF, and I used at the time Michael Rubinstein's thesis. So he wrote that in 1998, and I did this work in 1999. And I had to follow his thesis very closely, and I had to do calculations with incomplete gamma functions. So for the computational part was computing the zeros of the L function. At the time, I'm not a very good programmer, so it took me about like 6 months to do it. Now, Rubinstein has developed this over the last 10 years, and he has this L function calculator, and you can just go there and use it. So this is a very useful tool, and it should be useful for maybe other calculations in this field. Okay. So I should say right now, Rubinstein and William Stein are also, they have a grant where they're working on this a lot to find all zeros of L functions of low degree. Here's the list of zeros from Rumley's data. Okay. Here's zeros I calculated using Rubinstein's thesis. I should point out that even much before Rubinstein's thesis, Ligarius and Lidskill wrote a paper where they computed the zeros of Artin-L functions, which were very low. And Rubinstein's thesis went much further. He studied the incomplete gamma functions in different cases. Okay. I also calculated other examples. I looked at the Hilbert class field of Q square root of minus L for L equals 31, 59, 83. You can do prime number races between different conjugacy classes, and here's some of the data you get in exactly the same setting. You can also, I also did it in one other case, which wasn't S3. I did a dihedral group of order 8, and I did calculations there too. And the last thing that I was really interested in, and I didn't do at the time, was a quaternion, so it was this extension, L equals Q theta, where theta is this element. The Galois group of this is of order 8, and it's a quaternion group. It has 5 characters. And the degree 2 Artin-L function vanishes at 1/2. And so what happens in this case, if you look at it, is I said before that squares are always losers. But if you look in this setting, there's special cases where squares which are supposed to be losers won't be losers. The vanishing of this will change the behavior. So this is a case where where there's an extra bias, which is an algebraic bias. But unfortunately, at the time, I never did any calculations because the Artin-L function had a large Artin conductor, which was 42,000, and it would have taken way too long to find the zeros. But now, with the L function calculator, I think it might be worthwhile to go back and do this calculation and see what you get. But thank you for your attention.
Are there any questions from Fields first?
Yes, no. Any questions? There are no questions in this end.
Okay. And Ermax, questions? There you go.
Hi, Nathan. So you pointed out that if you can distinguish classes by how square they are,
yeah,
that's sort of an important deciding factor. If you have two conjugacy classes that are about equally square, start
to be 1/2.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. The cubes don't even come in or something?
Cubes don't come in.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Hi, Nathan. In result with Habib, that's A less than 40.
Yeah.
So under GRH, it should be log n to the square. Is this correct? So
log DL squared,
yeah,
on
so,
GRH.
So the A actually should expect to be zero.
Yes. That's correct. But it's not known to be better than zero, like say in the case of the least quadratic non-residue, nobody's gotten anything better than that, 0.1.
So what I'm saying is that unlike the linear constant,
yeah,
is not the best possible.
Some people think the conjecture should be log DL to some constant. Yeah.
Are there any further questions from our Max? No? Well, then let's thank Nathan once again.